Welcome to another episode of the Nui Tech People Podcast. On today's episode, we have Mitchell Bright, Lead Electronics Engineer at Design and Industry. Welcome, Mitchell.
Thank you for having me.
Those of our listeners that don't know who you are, can you give us a bit of an overview of who you are and maybe your career to date?
So I grew up in the Maitland area, went to university at Newcastle Uni. When I got there, got a scholarship, it's called Unis at the time, and that allowed me to work at a company called Bramco Electronics over the summer. That turned into more and more work there in the testing department, and that let me see how engineering's practiced, particularly in Newcastle, and doing product development while I was studying, which I found very valuable.
Just on that, before we go any deeper.
Yep.
You're at university and working at the same time?
So initially it started off as a scholarship just in the summer. So while uni is off for the year, going and basically just working your entire holiday there, and you get paid a small amount of money distributed over the whole year. So it ends up being like a few thousand dollars a year just to help a student, but the really valuable part is the experience.
Yeah, nice.
And then after the first placement I did there, asked for a job. At the time I was delivering pizzas, and that is awful. And they needed help, so let me join the testing team there. It's essentially what I was doing in the placement anyway. And then that just grew from there. Started working more and more time there, and I spent a lot of time, as much time as I could spare, outside of uni working there.
Yeah, nice. And it was a three-year uni degree?
Four-year uni degree. Uni scholarship added an extra year, where it was just a year full-time work experience. And I did a double degree in math, so it was another year on top of that. 6 years in total.
6 years in total. All right. University tends to be a topic we talk about on this podcast every time.
Yep.
Just because there are different career paths in technology, engineering. Different people go way around things differently. University tends to play a role in, I guess, a majority of people's careers with different levels of success. Keen to get your opinion. You obviously invested 6 years of your life in university. Your overall experience?
Really positive, actually. I heard a lot of people saying, you never use anything you learn at uni, and you just do it for the paper, and then you learn everything you need on the job. I found quite the opposite. I learned working at the same time as uni. I think that was the big difference, because I could see learning something, and then I would go and ask my engineering mentors how that was used and actually see how it was applied. And I think the mistake people make a lot is that they don't look for where things could be applied. Now, it depends on the job as well. I had the luxury of being able to see electronics being developed while I was at university. A lot of people go into doing PLC programming and much higher level things, where it's a lot harder to see the connection between the university theory and the practice. But I could see it directly, things like digital filters, circuit design, circuit analysis, all of it translated pretty much directly, and I've used just about everything that I learned at uni.
Yeah, nice. I think that's, as you said, the key is that marrying up of the theory and the actual application of that in real world, and being able to, if you're doing that at the same time, a lot of advantages as opposed to learning the theoretical side of it, forgetting it potentially, and then years down the track being like, oh, I sort of remember doing a bit of that at university, right?
Yep.
Yeah, nice. Before we go further down your career path, you mentioned you grew up in Maitland. I imagine growing up in Maitland, like looking at Newcastle, the Greater Hunter for engineering roles, there probably wasn't thousands of them available when you're growing up, right? I feel like across technology, there used to be a train of thought that you go to university and you'd have to move away for a job. It sounds like you found it pretty easy to stay in Newcastle. Have you seen a bit of a change in the landscape as you've been in the Newcastle market in the amount of engineering roles locally?
These days, definitely. Back then, to be honest, I didn't really consider looking for jobs before I started uni. I didn't base my decision on what I was going to study based on that. That is something I probably should have done if I could go back now. I don't think I'd change anything, but knowing where you're going to have to work and the life decisions you're going to have to make after uni is very important. But I think the most important thing for me was studying something that I loved. And so it didn't matter. Everything else would just fall into place. And I guess being young and naive helped a lot with that as well, not really considering those sorts of consequences. But I also assume that if the university offered a degree, that you'd be able to get a job. And surprise, surprise, you can't really get a lot of intensive electronics jobs in Newcastle, at least then. I think that's changed a lot now. particularly with D&I coming to Newcastle. But I think there's no shortage of work these days.
Yeah, we'll get on the D&I coming to Newcastle down to track in this episode. But I completely agree. I feel like the amount of those roles that were available, even when I started recruiting tech in Newcastle 7-8 years ago now, versus what they are now, is night and day difference. I think there's definitely more opportunities for junior engineers to get their first taste, as well as we're crying out for senior level talent locally as well.
Yep.
So that space has definitely changed over that period.
Yep. I think with new degrees being offered, like these medical based engineering degrees, I think the university creates the degree, but there's no jobs in Newcastle that I'm aware of, very few of them for those sorts of degrees. And I think when I went through university, I started computer engineering, which is, I guess, the start of these combination degrees. Mechatronics is a very popular one these days.
Yeah.
So electrical engineers find it very easy to just go straight into a job in this area. But the more niche the degree, the harder it is. And I think that's changing these days. And I think the evolution of technology over the years has helped a lot with that as well.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like Newcastle and the Greater Hunter in general is a really strong space to take advantage of those type of roles and those type of companies coming to Newcastle and growing in Newcastle. I think there's a lot of companies who, obviously proximity to mining, proximity to agriculture in the Greater Hunter as well, having that those industries locally as well definitely helps our career path and opportunities locally.
Yep.
Nice, mate. So university degree, your spare time you're doing some part-time work. Got your first role after 6 years of university. How's the career grown from there?
So by the time I finished university, I'd already developed my first product under the supervision of other engineers at the time, but learned so much about the entire process by that point, which allowed me to get a job at Amcontrol, Bramco's competitor, and just straight into an electronics role. So Amcontrol offer a graduate program. But I was able to completely skip that and be straight into the engineering team doing product development. So I think, again, that experience when you're studying is crucial if you can get it. So fight as hard as you can to try and get a role like that. Then the mining downturn hit. I was about Amcontrol about for a year and a half, then decided to, well, just got married as well. It was around 2013 and decided if I was going to make a change, now's the time, and decided to moved to Sydney to see what I could get work-wise there, because there were a lot of exciting roles in technology in Sydney. Never really wanted to live in Sydney. I've always loved living in Newcastle and the sort of the whole vibe the place has got, but there was just no work. So moved to Sydney at a company called Acme Networks. It was a startup from these two guys that were at Broadcom making an embedded Wi-Fi module. And the role that I did there essentially was, I started off as automated testing, a lot of Python and testing the electronics that was being developed predominantly by a guy in the US. We wrote a lot of software very quickly, faster than we could test it. And we needed a solid test infrastructure to be able to constantly validate everything that he was developing. And over the years, that evolved into mobile app development. So essentially, I was filling in gaps in what the business could do, because the developer there was very solid at just pumping out code. And once we had a reasonable test infrastructure, I got interested in mobile app development. So I learned that in my own time. I used to catch the ferry into from Wentworth Point into the Sydney CBD. And that was about an hour of a really nice, smooth ride on the water where I could go and learn a bunch of new skills. So I did Android development. That evolved into iOS app development and eventually into React Native development using web technologies. And then an interesting opportunity came up just completely randomly at a pub. And there was a guy that I was working with that introduced me to another guy who was looking for a front-end developer for Seven West Media. Never thought I'd get a job like that, but just interviewed for it, explored the opportunity, and ended up working there for a few months before getting promoted to running the front end development team at Seven West Media on the 7 Plus app. And yeah, I really enjoyed that experience. But I guess I really did want to come back home. And part of the reason for making that change into web development was it was a pathway back to Newcastle, because there were a lot of web development jobs, not many jobs in electronics or product development, other than the mining heavy jobs.
Yeah.
And from there, they let me work remotely, actually. So when I approached them initially, I said, you know, I'm transitioning back to Newcastle. I'd like to work remote if I can. And the guy that I spoke to originally said that was an option. And they were hesitant at first, but it did work out. So I was sort of their experiment, and the boss there at the time really wanted it to work as well. So I think you've got to have people that can see the potential for that sort of thing to work. And just randomly, while I was at a web development meetup in Newcastle, Heath from New Ventures turned up there and recognized me from when I worked with him at AMP Control, and he was at ResTech, and they worked very closely. They were owned by the same people, basically. So once we got talking there, he was trying to basically poach me and say, you know, come and work for us doing products, electronics. And I thought about it, and at first I'd worked very hard to get into the web technology sector, you know, took essentially a pay cut, and Seven West Media took a chance on me to transition into it.
Yeah,
it worked out, but I thought if I had to do that again, I might not be so lucky next time. But I thought I was confident that I could do it again if I had to. And if it didn't work out, you know, I had a few months to figure out whether New Ventures was right for me or not. And ended up being a really good choice. I think what eventually made me change back to electronics was it's the most fun I've ever had in my career is making things. And being able to design hardware and software that runs on that hardware and deliver a product is a lot more fulfilling than something that's purely digital. I enjoy making all of it, but I think that's the most fun that I've had is actually making real things, hardware. And then rolled on to being acquired by D&I.
Yeah, nice.
That's where I am today.
Mate, that's a very unique and I would say rare skill set that you've got, going from the electronics background and the engineering background into learning web dev, then becoming real well-rounded in the mobile space in particular, running a front-end team, then coming back to product.
Yeah,
picking up new skills is obviously something that comes relatively naturally to you. Is that accurate? Is it?
I'd say it takes a lot of hard work. So there's a lot of hours that I've put of my own time into doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, pretty much every commute trip that I could, I was on the laptop learning something new.
And how'd you go about your learning?
It started off in like online MOOCs, as I call them.
Yeah.
So Coursera was a start, and there were some courses on there about Android development, but there's only so far you can get with someone telling you how to do something. You have to go and do it. And a lot of that time was me trialing and failing to build apps and figuring out what's going wrong. And web development in particular has excellent learning resources online. There's so many courses and there's so much content to go and pick up. So that's one of the easiest things I think to learn because of that availability and also the development tools that are available for it. I mean, it's all just sitting there in your browser, push F12, and you've got this incredible debugging capability. Whereas hardware to do the same thing, you need a lot of gear, and it's all quite expensive. It's getting better these days, but still very expensive to get into.
Yeah, nice. So you would say your advice to young people or some people, let's say transitioning from hardware to software, or somebody that doesn't have software experience trying to get their first job in web dev, would be plenty of free resources online. Watch a bit of them and play. Watch, build, test.
The most important thing is to find something you love doing.
Yeah.
Once you have that, then it's a lot of hard work. But essentially, yeah, the way to do it is seeing what you can get online. See if you know somebody that is already doing it that can help you, give you pointers. Because I was working with a guy at that Acme Network startup, which ended up being acquired by Silicon Labs, to ask him, you know, I've got this particular problem with CSS. It's not moving where I want it to move. What would you do? And then he would go and send me down a direction. So that helps. If you can't do that, then, I mean, there's a bunch of forums online where people are generally pretty helpful. But, yeah, learn by doing.
Yeah. Mate, I couldn't agree with you more. Like a lot of people that I've seen have success has been somebody that, hey, like you mentioned, has got a passion around something. So it's a lot easier to put in hours after work and get better if you're actually passionate about what you're doing. Build something in your own time. I think that's massive. Again, people that are in a day job and they only do what they do during a day and have no interest in it outside of work, you know, really difficult to see them, you know, kicking on. Third part you mentioned there is like that mentorship. I think it's over. I think there's so many opportunities for people to gain knowledge through mentorship. And it doesn't have to be a formal mentorship, but just informal and knowing somebody and asking them a question, right?
Yep. Yeah, and it helps the mentor a lot, just as much as the student.
Yeah.
Because it helps solidify in their mind what they're doing. And I think in my experience, being a mentor is what helps round off your knowledge to the point where you are actually good at it after that. But until then, it makes you question actually what you know and why you know it, and helps complete your experience.
Yeah, mate, I think that's really, really valuable advice for younger people trying to get into web dev or transition from hardware into software as well.
Yep. I think the other key thing is that you need to be willing to put in a lot of time yourself outside of work. So there was a guy I used to work with that he asked me, how did you go from embedded software development to Android apps? I want to do the same thing. And I said, exactly what I said to you before, working on the train and the ferry and a lot of my own personal time. And he said, well, I just don't have the time for that. So can you provide me with the opportunity at work to do it? And I said, well, it's really hard for a business to justify, a big chunk of your day learning something completely new, especially when it's only a few hours a day. It's going to take a long time for you to come up to speed, and it's going to be a huge investment. If you can get it, fantastic. I think the only real way to do it is to invest in yourself and in your own time, and that's where the passion comes in. If you really care about it, you will do whatever it takes.
I couldn't agree with you more, mate. Personally, I've been through it myself. I've got three kids. I used to do a lot of work when they go to bed. I'd have a chat with my wife. I'd dinner chat with my wife until 9. Kids go to bed at 7, chat with her until 9 o'clock. She'd be going to bed. I'd be working between 9 p.m. and like 1 or 2 a.m.
Yep.
And that sort of time with no distractions. And I was trying to teach myself how to build websites back in the day. It's like, if you've got a big enough driver for it or passionate enough in it, there's a bunch of, bunch of time there if you're passionate enough about it. Like, everyone's got time or can make time. Not everyone can work. You can't work until 1 o'clock in the morning, forever. Yep. You do burn out. But there's a time, if you run hard for a short period of time to pick up a skill or something that's going to change your career, I feel like it's time well invested. Everyone's got a weekend. I know people, you have other passions, but as you said, if you're passionate about changing your career, or you're passionate about that becoming your career, can change the entire trajectory of your life or your career for you working your weekends for a 6-month period.
Yep.
6-month investment in that to change your entire trajectory of your career is worth it, right?
Yeah. And plus, it didn't really feel like work to me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's what I was doing on the weekend anyway.
Yeah. It's that passion, right?
Yeah.
Now, I find that in particular in that, I guess, the hardware or the product space, the people that actually build products, they tend to be tinkerers or people that are building these sort of stuff on the weekends or side projects, fixing up their home automation or things like that as well. That passion comes through, right?
Yep.
Yeah, nice. So, mate, you mentioned you ended up at New Ventures before they were acquired. New Ventures, shout out to Heath. We will get Heath on the podcast one day. We've talked about it a few times. Talked about it probably half a dozen times, just timing hasn't worked out. But mate, Heath, probably one of the most well-rounded people I've come across in, in my networks as well, in having that well-rounded skill set. Was he play a bit of a mentor role for you as well in that New Ventures space?
Yeah, he did. So I worked there for about 4 years, and it's the longest I think I'd ever been at one particular job for various reasons. But I think he cared about the team. And we felt like essentially he had our back and engineering wise, and he provided a lot of valuable feedback for a design. So he did these very detailed reviews on the work that we were doing. I think the thing that I added to the business at the time, it was him and a junior engineer. And the thing that I added to the business was a bit more senior expertise and product management to let Heath go and do other things. Without managing every single project. And the interactions that I had with him were mainly around these detailed technical reviews. And he's brilliant at that. You can just give him a circuit and he'll tell you the ins and outs of how it will work. And that's what he loves doing as well. I think as the business grew, he was doing less and less engineering and more management and business development. And I think he got further and further away from what he really loves doing, which is the engineering side of it. And I think, you think engineer, he's a good image of that.
Yeah, I can agree with you more. And then design and industry have come to Newcastle. Can you give us a bit of I had come to Newcastle through an acquisition, but can you talk to me about how that journey's been for you? And let's start there, a little bit about design and industry, and then we can go into maybe some of the more exciting stuff you're working on now.
So Design and Industry is Australia's leading product design and development consultancy. So they've been predominantly doing industrial design over 35 years. Got a very impressive portfolio. I saw your website up before.
Yeah.
Just heaps and heaps of projects on there and very big, awesome looking projects. But predominantly industrial design. It's only very recently they've started doing electronics. They started that in, so we've got three offices. So Sydney's the head office, Melbourne, and then now Newcastle.
Yeah.
And started electronics in the Melbourne office as an experiment, went very well. And the weak point for their projects was the electronics. So they're using contractors, third-party companies to do all the electronics and running into problems a lot, actually. So there were a lot of success stories, but they were noticing more and more issues starting to creep in. It was holding up delivery of the projects for the sections they were working on. And so they decided to try doing that in-house because they've got a successful model for industrial design and just applying that to the electronic side and owning more of it and also expanding the business at the same time. In the background, so they were doing this in the background while they started working, giving us work at Nui Ventures. The connection was between the head of D&I Newcastle now, John Lankin, and the founder of D&I, Murray Hunter. So they know each other way back when John actually was a customer of D&I. So John and Murray have this connection from way back, and John essentially called Murray up and said, I'm working at Nui Ventures, we're an electronic design consultant in Newcastle. Have you got any work for us? And they said, yeah, we've got too much work. So they gave us one project to start with, then another, and before we knew it, we were predominantly doing work for D&I. I guess over the years that I was at Nui Ventures, we were doing lots of little projects. Essentially, that's what took us from a very small business working out of the TAFE in 1804 to being able to move into our own office and then really start building our internal capability up and sort of accelerate the growth of the business to the point where, Heath was doing less and less engineering. Yeah, essentially that's how we started with D&I. And then as time went on, in the background, apparently there was talks between D&I and Heath about just taking us over because it was going well. And the rest is history.
Yeah, beautiful. Mate, how's that journey been from, an internal employee's perspective going through an acquisition? Acquisitions in technology can go one of two ways. They can go multiple ways, but you can hear very positive stories and some, you know, hardship stories. How's the experience been for you going from a smaller company to and a big part in a small company to a smaller part in a bigger company?
This has actually been really positive. So I went through an acquisition when Silicon Labs bought Zentry at the time. It rebranded a few times. So I went from Acura Networks to Zentry to Silicon Labs. And at that point in my career, I was really wanting to use Linux day to day. And so all of a sudden you get this corporate laptop with all of the antivirus stuff on it. And you've got to work in the company's way. Essentially, we were able to keep operating for 6 months or so, but then eventually we transitioned. And that's around the time that I left. Silicon Labs itself was a great company, but I just didn't really want to work in a big corporate again at that time. So fast forward, I think the D&I acquisition of Nui Ventures came at just the right time for Nui Ventures size. We grew quite rapidly. So when I joined, like I said, I was the third engineer at the time. And now we've got a team of six or so. And, Melbourne team have about five. And essentially we were at the point where we really needed some investment in more equipment, but also to standardize our approach internally. So we all had, some people running Windows, some people running Mac, some people running Linux, and we didn't really have any strict internal standards. It was all about just making you efficient at what you're doing. Yeah. But the size that we were at, we really needed to start working together a lot more and nailing down or getting rid of the friction points, essentially. So sharing documents internally, being able to take a customer spec from external sources like or in a Word doc format, for instance, and being able to edit those and send them straight back. So what D&I provided was all that infrastructure. So they've got this time management system called Pulse, which helps streamline. They custom designed that bit of software. So that helped us with all our time sheeting and project management as well, yeah. Which was something we were doing manually before. It takes up a lot of time, which was fine when you're doing, one or two projects, but when you're all of a sudden doing 10, it gets a lot harder. So that system helped a lot. Also bringing in, everyone running Windows on, some standard software suites. And helped us just get more efficient at doing that mechanical stuff, and you know, had all these document templates, which we were, you know, now we've got to make a packing list template, and that was the way we were doing it at New Adventures, because we didn't really need any of that stuff at the time, but just over time suddenly needed it. The experience was going from very small company doing just what was needed to outgrowing that mode, and then just getting an injection of capital and equipment and infrastructure to allow us to continue building that team.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I feel like what you've just mentioned there, and that growth, the challenges come with growth in scaling up. It's you build your business and you had success based on the quality of the work you put together, but then to scale from there further up, you need to standardize the processes and really build out, you know, the company or the organization behind just the really talented engineers.
Yep.
I feel like that's a common thing in the consultancy space, where you can win a bunch of work on the quality of the engineers that you have and the work that you deliver, but like that infrastructure behind it, having a big company, obviously super beneficial.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, D&I isn't a huge company, but they've got a very slick system internally to be able to deliver. Yeah. And without that, I mean, that takes a huge investment. Like I said, they've developed those tools internally.
Which I imagine makes your life easier as an engineer as well. You can concentrate on stuff that you're good at, that you actually enjoy doing, as opposed to the other work.
Yep, definitely. Yeah, so at New Adventures, we tried to avoid that as much as possible and lean on the companies, the clients that we're working for, to provide us a laptop with all that sort of proprietary software on it. But we were getting to the point where we were having to do more and more of it.
And the D&I growth story, the acquisition happened, what, 12 months ago now?
Yeah, about that. So it was around, I think, September-ish last year.
Yeah. And, mate, is there growth plans for the future?
Definitely. So we can't hire people fast enough. At the moment, the essentially we're considered an extension of the Sydney office. So while the Melbourne team have industrial design and electronics capability under the same roof, Sydney are industrial designers, and they're expecting us in Newcastle to be the electronics arm of that. And they've got so much work, it's not even funny. We don't know how we're going to do it. So we need people as soon as we can get them, but they can't just be anyone. We don't just want bums in seats. We want really passionate people that love what they're doing and can essentially take some of the slack at the moment.
Yeah, nice. And is there any projects in particular that you're allowed to share at the moment that you guys are working on that might be pretty exciting?
Yeah, so a lot of medical stuff, actually. So we're ISO 13485 certified, and we're doing more and more medical products, which I think will be of interest to people studying these medical engineering degrees in uni. And one of these projects is a company called Advanced Cell, making this nuclear isotope generator. Essentially, they're revolutionizing the treatment of prostate cancer. So there's this particular isotope that's a very short half-life in a matter of hours. And so you can't just make a batch of it and then ship it off and store it somewhere. You have to use it straight away. So you need to be able to generate it on site. And obviously there's issues with generating nuclear isotopes on site. So Advanced have come up with this process, and D&I have been developing a product with them to allow a hospital to generate this particular isotope and then be able to inject that into a patient within hours.
Prostate cancer.
That's one of the 10. There's also a robotic arm, which is essentially a printer that's going to help burn victims regrow their skin. So essentially it's printing skin onto people, and they take this this small patch of skin, and they can put that in this magic solution that then is able to generate up to 30 times that area in new skin for people. So it's like cutting edge medical devices that you can be involved with. Yeah, it's amazing what comes through the door there. So we're also doing work with Harvard Medical School. So there's a few robot-based projects for that. And there's also one particular one where we're trying to identify signatures of bacteria in urine in catheters in hospitals to be able to detect infections early before they get to a dangerous point.
Wow.
So yeah, so much going on.
That's fine. Well, I guess you probably, you know, growing up in Maitland, you probably weren't thinking about these sizes and scopes of projects that you might be working on.
I was quite happy developing industrial protection relays.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't even dream of working on projects like this. I mean, cutting edge stuff.
Yeah. All right. Just quick shout out then. If you are Newcastle based and have an interest in these type of roles, what's the easiest way for them to get in touch with you, and maybe what sort of skills would you be looking for?
Yeah, I guess just call the D&I Newcastle office. I think we've got ads out on all the platforms, but yeah, we can make that information available. And I think what I'm looking for in people in particular is this passion. That's really important. If you don't have that, then yeah, so I don't know how you're going to succeed in this. Yeah, so wanting to really enjoy making things, but also having a really solid fundamental backing. So understanding the theory about what we do and how we do it. If that's electronics, you know, knowing your circuit theory in and out, and you'll do that naturally by using it. And so in interviews, I tend to ask people a few questions that will tell me whether they've used any of their uni or not. And for software, it's essentially having experience with a bunch of different frameworks, but mainly about planning what your software needs to do before you do it. I think that's another important thing that people don't do is think about what they're trying to build before they build it. There's an element of, you know, prototyping where you need to go and come up with a concept and then test it out before you go and, you know, write this really long product specification. But being able to picture how you're going to build something will help you ask the right questions that you need to know before you go and build it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other key attribute I look for is people being humble. So if you come out of university thinking that you know everything and you don't need to learn anymore or you can do the job, then you'll stagnate very quickly and you won't be able to learn what you need to learn.
Yeah.
I think you're going to spend an entire career trying to learn everything about either electronics or software or both and fail. There's just too much out there to know. So being able to recognize that, I think, is the only way that you're actually going to be able to soak up as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, nice. Mate, I think that's some good advice. Not only good advice for people that maybe want to work under you at some point, but just advice for juniors in general.
Yep.
Who are trying to build a career. Mate, for a guy like yourself, obviously, it sounds like it's pretty, you know, it's a massive role. There's the product design, there's both, you know, hardware and software element to it. It's an all-encompassing role. How do you manage your day? How do you get through? How do you manage productivity for Mitchell?
It is tricky. There's far too much work to do. I've been using to-do lists. They're not working out so well for me because the to-do list keeps growing and growing infinitely. And I was looking at a little motivational video on the weekend, actually, which was saying that to-do lists are where tasks go to die, essentially. 40% of tasks that end up on there just don't get done. And what I have been doing lately is using my calendar a lot more. And that's something that they recommended as well. Me and John sit down once a week and talk about all the projects we've got on and how we're going to resource them and come up with a bunch of essentially deliverables for that week. And then I go into my calendar and block out sections of time within that calendar where I'm going to work on these things to add up to that number of hours that I need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially go off the calendar at that point. That's essentially planned out your whole week. And it doesn't always go to plan, but I think having the plan to start with is really important and knowing that if you don't do the task at this time, then you've got to find somewhere else in your week to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. You've mentioned, obviously, you're a passionate guy about what you do and you do some learnings outside of work. Do you have some go-to resources that you come back to, whether it be a podcast you listen to all the time or a really book that you found a lot of value out of or any of those MOOCs that you've done that you think, hey, highly recommended?
No particular resource all the time. I think Google's getting so good now, you can just go and search for whatever you need at the time.
Yeah.
But I've used a whole bunch of things over the years. If you find a good book or you can get a recommendation for a good book, that's a great place to start. But they do take a long time to read. So yeah, nothing specific comes to mind.
No, that's fine. But as you said, Google and YouTube in particular are phenomenal these days with the amount of good quality free content out there.
Yep.
It's really changed the game. Mate, advice for a younger version of yourself? You've obviously done a lot in your career and you've gone from, you know, a very diverse career path, going down in electronics and teaching yourself software and mobile development and coming back to a more of a well-rounded role. If you had advice for a young version of yourself on how to build your career?
Don't be afraid to look dumb. So when I first came out of uni, I was petrified about just looking stupid in front of other engineers and trying to get to be considered a senior engineer as soon as possible. And I think I wasted a lot of learning opportunities that way. And I met a particular guy when I was at Amp Control who gave me some really good advice, essentially set me on the path that I'm on today. And that is, it's okay to ask silly questions. It's the only way you're going to learn, actually.
Mm.
And I saw so many people making the same mistakes I was. They would say something, realize that they don't know what they're talking about, and then quickly try to backtrack or hide that, and then frantically go and Google it later, try and learn it. Whereas if they just asked the question, people around them would have said, here's how it works. And then other people would have also learned at that point as well. Asking lots of questions and don't be afraid to look dumb.
Yeah, mate, I think there are a lot of people that have those questions, you know, in a meeting and put your hand up or ask questions. Many other people sit in the same room, the same question, just with the fear of actually, as you said, looking dumb.
Yep, I think the other thing is self-confidence. So it took me a long time to get any sort of self-confidence. You know, I was off into sort of late 20s, early 30s. And I think that came because I suddenly felt like all of a sudden I could do the job and I didn't feel like as much of an imposter anymore. But I didn't need to wait that long. I think if you can find a way to get that confidence earlier through just realizing that you're not perfect.
And no one's perfect also.
Like
you could be sitting there with imposter syndrome as a junior or junior mid, not realizing that as senior or the lead or the company owner also doesn't know everything and have all the answers. I feel like just the acknowledgement of that not everyone's got the answers or have the answers to everything, it goes a long way.
Yep. And they're probably worried about being found out as an imposter as well.
Yeah. Well, I feel like that transparency, right, goes a long way though. I feel like in my experiences, when somebody's willing to put their hand up and say, hey, I don't know that, I'll come back to you, an answer that you might not know, actually that transparency on, I don't know the answer to that, but I'll find out and come back to you, it goes a long way.
Yep, definitely.
As it's a lot easier to respect somebody on the back of that, right?
Yep.
Mate, we mentioned YouTube and Google as a nice and easy place to go for learning new information. You mentioned earlier in the podcast today about mentors being another way to help, I guess, juniors grow in their career. Have you had any mentors in particular that you found super interesting or valuable that have changed, you know, the career shape for you?
Yeah, so the mentoring I had early on in my career was vital in setting me up for the rest of my career, and that was engineers that were really good at what they did, explaining things in the process of engineering to me. Recently, I've needed more help on the business side of things, you know, getting requirements and also managing projects effectively and dealing with customers. That's really hard to do, and that's something that I figured out during the New Adventures days that I needed to work on a lot, because I've worked on a lot of the technical stuff up to that point, and that's a big weak spot in my experience. So John Lankin, my boss at the moment, he joined New Adventures as a general manager, and he's the original connection, as I mentioned before, to D&I. And he's been incredibly valuable in teaching me a lot about how to deal with these client relationships and managing projects to be able to get good outcomes and, you know, focusing on deliverables. And he's got quite an interesting background himself. He's been involved with big movies like The Matrix and did the soundtrack for that, also Heat and The Firm. And him and his team won or got awarded Oscars for scientific contributions to feature films.
Wow.
Very impressive background. Used to work at a company or run it called Fairlight. And that was, he worked in the US for a long time. Essentially joined New Adventures because he was bored. And we were so lucky that he joined, because he took us from a small startup into something that that Dean and I was interested in, and also the work that we're doing now. I don't think we could do it without John. So he's helping guide the entire team in the client-facing part of it, and essentially managing their client relationship. And I can't understate the value that adds. It overstated. It's just incredibly valuable experience to work with him.
Well, so fun, really interesting. The more conversations I have with people in Newcastle, the more talented people that are unearthed that most people don't even know about, right?
Yeah.
You know, somebody's winning Oscars and, you know, contributing to science and movies, like, it's phenomenal. And so most people don't know of these people or of the talent or the skills that are local around, that, hey, if they knew the right people to ask, there's people that you can ask the questions for that have a wealth of knowledge.
Yep, definitely. And the other thing he's shown me over the years is the importance of relationships, not just client relationships, but also suppliers. So we're in an age where it's very easy to buy things online now, and you don't have to talk to anyone to be able to do it. And you end up just being what he calls a catalog engineer, and just, you know, going looking up DigiKey, buy some parts, they arrive, you build the thing, but it limits you to what everyone else can get access to.
Mm-hmm.
He comes from a background of doing cutting edge electronics, you know, very high end audio equipment. You can't just use off the shelf bits for that. He was talking directly to the silicon manufacturers and getting chips designed for him, or at least getting early access to new designs so that you, by the time you came to market with your product, it was a brand new chip that no one else had. And he's shown me and the team that it's not actually that hard to strike up these relationships. Essentially, you just need to reach out and talk to these suppliers instead of talking to a distributor as an annoyance or a sale that they're trying to make. Look at it both ways, where you can get access to like early silicon that no one else has access to, or at least be able to talk to people that can talk directly with vendors in China, for instance. And if you know what's coming onto the market before anyone else, all of a sudden you've just got an advantage that no one else has, and all it takes is a conversation.
Yeah, mate. As much as business and the world moves more digital, I feel like that genuine relationship building and those conversations that I had person to person goes a long way and can be still a big, big differentiator in business.
Definitely. I mean, we're all people at the end of the day. Yeah. We work best by talking with each other.
No, I completely agree, man. Mate, for those, and it might be more in particular for the juniors, because I feel like you provide a real lot of advice for junior engineers in trying to build their careers today. But for anyone in general that would like to get in touch with you, what's the easiest way for somebody to reach out and have a conversation?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn, call the office, send me an email. I can leave those details with you. But
yeah, we'll put that in the show notes on our website. Yeah.
Essentially, that's it. I think I used to go to a lot of meetups. Haven't lately. They're all starting to start back up again. I think I should see that circuit again.
Yeah. I think the meetup scene's starting to grow again in Newcastle. It's always really strong for many, many years. COVID obviously had a massive detrimental effect to that. But the meetup scenes are definitely coming back, which I think is beneficial for the Newcastle tech community.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I used to have too many to go to, and then I think everyone was getting a little bit tired of it, at least the people I spoke to, but I think they're keen to get back out again.
Yeah, nice. I appreciate you coming on the show today and taking your time. So thank you.
All right, thanks for having me.
Cheers.